What is arguably the most boring big bank in the world becomes a political target in Washington. From APM in Los Angeles today, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. The incoming House Majority Leader dropped a bit of a bombshell on Sunday TV yesterday. Kevin McCarthy said he is in favor of closing down the U.S. Export-Import Bank, an 80-year-old lender that has a charter that would typically be renewed in September. Marketplace's Noel King is with us. Good morning, Noel.
Good morning, David.
So what is Ex-Im Bank actually do?
Well, the bank's mission is to get American-made goods sold in foreign markets. And it does that in large part by loaning money to foreign companies and governments that buy products made in the U.S. So I'll give you an example. Say the state government of Lagos, Nigeria wants to buy 32 American-made fire trucks. The Ex-Im Bank authorizes a $15 million loan to that state government, and those American-made trucks go to Nigeria. Now, the biggest beneficiaries here are major manufacturers like Boeing, Caterpillar, GE, and they say the more planes and tractors and fire trucks we sell overseas, the more manufacturing jobs we keep here at home.
So an argument that that bank is good for business. So why does Kevin McCarthy want to let the bank's charter expire?
Well, as part of a shift within the Republican Party, the bank used to be popular with most Republicans. The criticism these days is coming from very conservative legislators who say this is crony capitalism and these loans are like corporate welfare. Now, their view is the Ex-Im Bank supports big companies like Boeing and GE at the expense of small American businesses, and they're using taxpayer money to do it. And Kevin McCarthy and others say, we don't need a government-run bank. We have the private sector. Let's let the market sort out the winners and losers. Big businesses say other countries have their own forms of export-import banks, and we're competing with them. So we expect, as we've seen before, a big push from business interests to try to lobby for the bank's charter to be renewed.
Marketplace's Noel King, thank you.
Thank you.
The GI Bill has just turned 70. It's hard to overstate its role in shaping post-World War II America. Now, the bill enabled so many returning veterans to go to college, and those without high school diplomas turned to the General Education Development Testing Service, better known as the GED or High School Equivalency Exam. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer takes a look.
When FDR signed the GI Bill on June 22, 1944, he called it
a second Bill of Rights.
With that signature, FDR created a huge new market for the private company behind the GED test, which had been created a few years earlier. Of course, in those days, it was mainly taken by returning troops who didn't have a high school diploma. Today, it's different.
So now we've got the GED heavily weighted toward a prison population.
Lois Quinn is an education researcher at the University of Wisconsin.
So the prisons become the greatest customer of the test.
Quinn also says more teens are taking the test after dropping out of high school, but some are questioning the GED's value. Christopher Swanson is vice president of Editorial Projects in Education, which publishes Education Week.
To the extent that there are more people with a high school diploma, then that would put, you know, folks with a GED at a disadvantage.
Even the military now prefers recruits with a high school diploma over those with a GED. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is a nonprofit, listener-supported service. A gift from you, yes, you if you can, in any amount, helps the Marketplace crew keep telling the money stories behind the news of the day. Help us end the budget year in a strong position by making a gift at marketplace.org by June 30th, if you could. Federal communications regulators on Friday proposed spending $1 billion to get wireless internet to 10 million more public school students by the academic year after next. Marketplace's Adrian Hill is covering this intersection of technology and education as part of a project we are calling Learning Curve. Hi, Adrian.
Hey, David.
So how many schools don't have the infrastructure that would allow the students easy access to the internet wirelessly?
You know, today around the country, only about 40% of K-12 schools have the wireless connections that would allow every kid to be on their own device. And it turns out that's actually a big deal. As more and more schools are thinking about adding technology to their curriculum, they want to be able to have every kid on a tablet or on a Chromebook.
So now, federal regulators, the FCC, want to do something about it. What are they going to do?
Well, since the 90s, there's been a program known as E-Rate. It's basically a government subsidy program to help schools and libraries get online. And we're talking a $2-plus billion program. But right now, it prioritizes schools getting wired instead of the connections actually inside the schools. If this regulation goes through, it would allow some of that E-Rate money to go to these Wi-Fi connections.
And this is part of a larger plan to get more classrooms online?
It is. The FCC has been reviewing the E-Rate program since last year. The White House actually announced a plan it calls Connect Ed, which wants to get 99% of kids connected to broadband and wireless networks by 2018.
And if my ship comes in and it's my personal goal to get every child K through 12 in a public school in this country online, what would I have to spend?
You'd need a big ship. You'd need a big ship. It's not going to be cheap. According to a recent study, around $3 billion over the next 4 years to get schools broadband and wireless connections.
Marketplace's Adrian Hill with the Project Learning Curve here at Marketplace. Adrian, thank you.
You're welcome.
And two published reports today suggest that the investment bank BNP Paribas, based in France, might pay about $8 billion to settle with U.S. authorities for allegedly hiding transactions that violated American economic sanctions overseas. 30 specific employees would be banned from working at the bank. Most have already left. But there's also another piece of the proposed penalty that seems innovative. BNP could get banned for 1 month from conducting business in U.S. dollars. Not sure if that means they'd have to try to pay the light bill in their New York offices with euros or renminbi, but we'll wait and see how they handle that. From Los Angeles today, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.